accession number 18493, reel 7.
Arnold Lupton, reel 7. You didn't get any Christmas leave, home leave, is that right?
No, there was no home leave. In fact, we didn't get any home leave until later on, just before we were going to France. And it was only 48 hours, I think. No, we were fully training and that kind of thing, as far as you could in the weather conditions. And yes, I don't think there was anybody let off for home leave at all then.
Were families allowed to come and visit?
No. You weren't supposed to tell them where you were. You were sort of British Forces post office or something. You know, careless talk costs lives and all that sort of thing. So we just sat.
Interestingly, you mentioned just now something to do with you know, when you were ammunitioning up, whether or not you might need that even in the UK for paratroopers. was this a live issue, a live scare at this time before you went to France, the fear of parachutists?
No, it wasn't really. That came later on when we were back in Fortress Britain. Yeah.
So, let's get you now to France, the actual move. I mean, how was the actual move to France announced? How did you learn about it?
I seem to remember just a few days before we actually went. I can't say how many. Six, seven, you know, it was sort of a week or 10 days. They told us to be prepared to move over to France and join the British Expeditionary Force there. But we were supposed to be going over to France on further training, actual field training. And so we had to be completely ready, but anyway, we were given in groups, more or less. We were given 48 hours leave to go home, and didn't know when we would see anybody again, so we had to make the most of it at that time.
Did you get away?
I got away, yes, and just had a very pleasant leave. But mind, it was I think it was early May at that time, so the weather was quite reasonable. And I remember taking home one of the friends I'd made in the army, who hadn't got anywhere else to go to, so that helped to lighten his troubles, or not, I think, however he wanted. No, he didn't have any troubles, really. Just didn't have anywhere to go. And we were back in time. I think everybody was, in fact. And then we had to prepare for going abroad, making sure that everything really was in top condition. Tanks, lorries, motorbikes, what have you. COs, cars and things, and then load up. Also, we had to go over with ammunition ready on the tanks, just in case, I suppose, something had happened, and we had to go straight into action, but it wasn't the plan to at that time. And then we prepared. We were then at Ringwood in Hampshire, which was not very far from Southampton. We went down to Southampton motor vehicles by road. I believe some of the tanks even went by road, but I had a feeling we where I was situated, my accommodation was in an old mill which was right alongside the station at Ringwood, which was, I suppose, just one of these country stations, but quite a big one. It had two lines through it and one or two bits of sidings and so on. Mainly, I suppose, for the mill, or whatever the mill was. It was a corn mill or something like that. Or being in that part of the world, it might even have been a cider apple mill or something, I don't know. But I'm sure that some of the tanks were put on flats at that station and taken down to Southampton by train.
Did you get to were you involved in loading any of these?
Not on that occasion, no. Only just in making sure that everything was in position for safe loading. And that was it. Yeah.
What was this packing up and getting ready to go over to an operational area like? Was it orderly or?
Oh, it was very orderly, yes. Everybody was given specified jobs to do, and you really had to make sure that everything was securely packed and loaded, but packed, and then loaded correctly, maybe in a sequence. It depended what sort of a transport it was, if it was office or it was just kit in the form of kit bags and so on. Make sure it was all well loaded and securely tied in, and then you were off when the moment was said. Move off.
So if you were tank crew, where was your, did you put all your personal belongings on your tank or in your tank, or did that travel separately?
Some of it travelled separately. You really only kept on the tank the things which you would need, not only shaving kit and all that kind of thing, but some spare clothes. Plus, of course, you had overalls, which you would use if you were working on the tanks. And those, well, I can't remember just whether they were limited to, say, two pairs of pants and one of trousers or one shirt or whatever it was, but you couldn't, of course, carry too much on a tank anyway, and it was just, you put it in a smaller bag, which was strapped on the outside of the tank, which was a bit awkward when you were in action sometimes because it got shot off. You did load it up anyway.
On your embarkation leave, how did the family and friends take the fact that you were headed off, particularly, of course, in view of the fact that the rather bad news that was coming out of France by this time?
Yes, well, I don't know. In the case of my family, my parents, I had two brothers also. Well, it was just one of those things that happened at that time. We had very limited forces available, and if you happened to be there in the forces, well, they more or less expected that you would go over sometime or the other. And of course my parents were used to the previously known Great War, and it was the regular thing for everybody to, well, nearly everybody to go. So they may have had certain qualms and all the rest of it, but there was nothing they could do about it anyway, and just wish you all the best.
Now, how about the journey? You didn't have far to go, Ringwood to Southampton, but then you got on. Then what happened when you were at Southampton?
Well, when they had got us all there, they began putting the vehicles onto one ship or two ships, I forget which, smallish freighters, I suppose they were, and put all the men onto one boat, which was more or less like one of the ferry boats they used to sail over the channel. And you, they got you, you know, it was very well organized, and they got you on all right, without any troubles. Got the vehicles on too, on their transports.
What was the accommodation like on board?
Well, you were really only on board for a few hours. It was just stand, sit, get where you could, and it depended. If you were liable to be seasick, you went and hung over the rail. But otherwise, you got whatever seating accommodation you could, whilst you could.
And where did you go to?
We went to Cherbourg, and the landing there was quite orderly too, as I remember it. You were just taken off in troops, more or less, troops forming squadrons. You went off the ship, and the vehicles were unloaded separately, also in Cherbourg docks, and then you were then sort of put together with the vehicle you were going to be on, and you travelled off. But of course the tanks there were put on flats anyway, because they couldn't have driven the miles, well, it wouldn't have done them any good to drive all the miles they would have to drive to where we were supposed to be going.
Did you know where you were going at this stage?
Somebody must have done. Well, no, we didn't. I seem to remember somewhere around Neufchâtel or something like that. I know it was what would it be? I suppose they had been the horse store places where we had our tanks in at some chateau, but I don't really remember which chateau it was. I don't know if I ever knew. And there we just sort of got ourselves organized to make sure which vehicle we were going to stay on, if possible, and what duties you were going to have.
So what were your particular duties on this?
Well, I remember firstly being on an A9, I think it was, because I remember loading it up with all its ammunition, its baggage and all this kind of thing. I also remember loading up a fair amount of cheese, but unfortunately that got on the wrong end. It got on the hot end at the back. You could probably smell us the other end of France when we got going with our camembert and so on. But I didn't stay on that tank. I was moved off into the B echelon. They apparently had enough people to serve tanks at that time without needing, could say, a rookie to be in position there. Because although I had been trained for various jobs, I wasn't really an old soldier, more used to travelling on these things.
So how were you allocated? Just
I was put on one of the supply vehicles which supplied, it was mainly water, which we used to carry in separate cans then. And it wasn't till later on we got some water carriers, but not in France. In France we still had to do that in cans. We also had to carry petrol in cans for tanks and for lorries and so on. We had to, of course, carry shot on some of the lorries, and yes, that was the job I had, was just to take water up.
What sort of cans were these?
Well, they were very much like in those days, petrol and things came in 2-gallon cans with a handle on the screw cap, and that's the kind of thing the water was in too.
Were these the famous or perhaps infamous things known in the British Army as flimsies?
No, really we got them later on in the desert. No, these were quite robust, I suppose, when they had plenty of metal available to make such things. And you could knock them about a bit. It didn't matter. Some of the things we got later on, they were not that type of thing at all.
What was your vehicle? Obviously a truck of some kind.
Yes, it was a 3-tonner, as they called them. I think it was a Morris or it might have been a Bedford. Those were the two main forms of vehicle we had then, with a sheeted over canopy on the back and a drop tail, not one of these lifting tails, but just shot it down to get things offloaded or loaded on.
Were you on your own in this vehicle? Did you have a driver's mate or something?
No, there were two of us normally. There was a driver's mate, yes. And you could sort of interchange these jobs if the driver's mate was also a driver. That is, some of them were not, which I found very awkward sometime later on in the war, but that was the case, and so you could lighten the load. Both of you would probably be responsible for loading and unloading the vehicle. You might have had one or two other people too to help you load it up, but not to unload it. And then you did the driving as necessary, and shared it if possible.
What about the water itself? I mean, when you went to load, were the cans already filled, or did you have to do the filling?
No, they were usually filled, ready. You had other people back at the headquarters, wherever the battalion was resting, or the B echelon was resting, and they would do the filling up, ready for you to come along and collect the cans later.
And then you would rendezvous with your squadron headquarters?
Yes, yes, that was right. And then probably you would have been told before you went to collect these things where you had to take it to, and then you would probably go off as a column of 3 or 4 vehicles together to wherever it was you had to deliver the water to, or the whatever else you were carrying.
About the lorries and the trucks and things you were using, one often hears that units went to France with impressed civilian vehicles. Were you conscious of any of those in your unit?
Only buses, single-decker buses, you know, the coaches, I suppose you call them nowadays, but Charros. as they were then, which we used for carrying spare bods who hadn't got some other vehicle to travel on. We did have some of those still, yes.
But were these army charabancs, or were they...
No, they were really civilian ones which had been camouflage painted, and that was all. They were just used for running spare files, as you might say, round about the place in numbers of 25, 30, whatever they'd take.
Was this in each squadron, or was this all... Or they all kept together at headquarters?
No, you would more or less have them in a squadron. You'd probably have a couple of these for each squadron. And they were just part of the mechanical vehicles available and maintained. They were driven by drivers who probably had never seen a bus before in their lives, but had learned to drive, and they looked after the vehicles, maintained them, because they had standard kind of engines and so on, tyres and that, and that was it.
You say they were in good old army camouflage. What was your camouflage scheme at this stage? Can you remember?
It was a sort of dirty brown and black, I think. Is maybe a blob or two of green somewhere, but it had just been slapped on to give some idea of not being a vehicle when it was parked up.
Is this the same on the tanks, or were they had different?
No, they had a similar sort of theirs were mainly, the background colour was a green, darkish green, and then swirls of black, perhaps a bit of brown on too.
And did you paint those? I mean, you within the regiment, did you paint those on, or did they arrive like that from?
No, we had to paint them on, which happened, of course, if you moved in some other theatre, like going off to the desert, you had to repaint them, and we had to do them.
Can you remember when you painted your vehicles before you went to France?
Well, it was in those last few days before we loaded up that we did. Well, we had been doing, I mean, there was a bit of camouflage on them while we were driving around in England, but we had to, I suppose, make it a bit more positive when we moved off into whatever form it was that somebody had decided was the best form of camouflage at that time for where we were going.
Can you remember, were you given designs, or how did it work? Did somebody tell you where you've got, which is the black, which is the green? And
well, you were told more or less where to stick it on and how much. You weren't actually given a pattern specially set, you must copy that exactly. They were all slightly different, I think you could say.
What about tactical markings? Can you remember anything about a tactical marking system?
I can't remember any at that time. The only tactical marking was mainly to, let's say, even if you didn't have a radio, you had a radio mast, and you would stick a flag on there, which was either green, red, blue, yellow, depending which company or squadron you were in, and then you might have some other mark on the tank itself, or another small pennant to say whether you were troop A, B, C or whatever, or 1, 2, 3 in that squadron. Otherwise, I can't remember the divisional mark at that time. We only really got down, well, we really got down to a different one when we were in the desert later on, but in France I don't remember.
How long did it take to get to from Cherbourg to wherever it is you were going?
I would put it at the outside 24 hours. It's difficult to recall now. But I seem to remember I was in one of those who were unfortunate enough to travel in one of those trucks, which the French had plenty of, on the railway for 40 men or 8 horses. I seem to remember being in this thing for the best part of 24 hours anyway. Some of the people who went on tracks on trains, I think they were about the same time too. Those who went by road, they got there earlier than us, maybe 12 hours altogether, so that they could prepare for us arriving later on, food and billets and whatever.
What sort of facilities had the French arranged for you on the railway, for the railway journey?
Ghastly. They were pretty appalling, really. You could get a little refreshment on the way. Wasn't necessarily the French who provided it, was British mainly, who were doing the provisions on the way. The accommodation in the trains was appalling, how they were supposed to get 40 men in. You could, I suppose, if you slept like matchsticks. 8 horses must have been a bit cramped too. It was primitive, all right. If the train stopped long enough, you could get off to do whatever business you needed to and hop back on again. Primitive was the best way to put it.
Did things improve when you arrived at your destination?
Well, when we arrived at our destination, it was, we were in outhouses and or some wooden huts, and the accommodation, I suppose, wasn't too bad, considering. And of course we had our had our own cookhouse and cooks to feed us. And there were taps provided and that sort of thing. Nothing luxurious at all, but quite to be expected in the circumstances, I think. Good enough.
And were you again squadron based still, so you were with your tanks?
Yes, we were still then. It was when we moved off, when everybody moved off in different directions from their tanks, trucks and so on, buses, that we got divided up between, you know, sections of battalions, of squadrons, got got distributed to different places around about a central area.
Is that the point at which you came off your tank and went into your truck?
Yes, that's so. When they were then, they had decided they had to move up into action. In fact, A squadron, I think it was, were in action very quickly out in France. C squadron were a bit later on, but they had decided that they would have to be separated then, and I was separated off the tank.
How long were you there at this first stop of yours in France?
Well, again, I don't think it was... A